All right, hey, special episode here. First time on the show, Mike Gittins from the War Rapport. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. It's good to finally sit down with each other. It's the spring, and now it's talking season, as you know. So Media Days is coming up, but before we get there, I'm sure there's going to be lots to talk about, especially with Auburn.
Yeah, well, hey, before we get to that, Mike, I want to compliment you on something. Shout out your setup at SEC Media Days. Shane and I, you know, we try to do things a little different, and you know, we thought we had a nice setup, but I'll just a little behind the scenes for the audience. I mean, Mike's got this giant computer. He's got all these fancy cameras, and there's people. It's such a nice setup that literally he and I, you know, we'd be talking at our booth, and people go up there and start touching his stuff. Like, it's so amazing that you just want to get your hands on it. So I got to compliment you on that.
Yeah, we might break out the PS5 this Media Days in Atlanta. So don't be surprised if there's a big screen TV, a PS5, and NCAA football on it this year.
And one other thing before we jump into Auburn, I really, you know, because there's probably a lot of my audience that maybe this is their first exposure to you and the War Rapport. You're totally independent. Can you kind of explain, you know, what it is that you're trying to do and why you're kind of, you're like us, man, you're doing it on your own, and maybe, you know, what you enjoy about that, maybe some of the challenges of that.
Well, you know, the War Rapport is just four guys who went to Auburn, and we decided to start a media channel back in 2019. For the first year, we were trying to figure things out, and then the December that Gus Malzahn got fired was when the channel really exploded. So we continued to put out content. I used to work for Auburn football as a doing coaches film. I filmed every practice and game for four and a half years in the early 2000s. So when Ronnie Brown and Cadillac and Jason Campbell were there, I was there during those times. I was part of that 2004 undefeated run they had. And so it was just kind of fun to put together a project where we were talking about something that we were passionate about every single weekend. Auburn was ruling our emotions in those days. So when they lost, it was like, I'm having a crappy weekend. And it's like, why not just put it on camera, these conversations that we're having anyway? As it tuned out, a lot of people were interested in hearing those conversations. And because we were professionals in our work lives, the crossover there helped us grow it as a business. And now the War Rapport is one of the premier sources for Auburn content and information. And we pride ourselves on that. I have a one-on-one sit down with Hugh Freeze on May the 5th. It's our yearly summer sit down where we sit down and get kind of like a assessment of the program. So to be in a place where you literally started a fan channel on YouTube, to I sit down with the head coach at Auburn every single year to talk football and life and players is definitely remarkable, and we're very blessed to be in the position that we're in.
That's awesome. But you did just gave me a nightmare flashback. 2004, I was a student at Tennessee and it was college game day, and it was this hyped game. It was Tennessee hosting Auburn. And I painted my face. It was half orange, half white. And then my hair, I did the same. I did like checkerboard hair. Mike, do you recall the final score of that game by chance?
Oh, man. Was it 34-17?
I thought it was 34-0, but it may have been. Oh. I mean, either way, Auburn came into town and just dominated Tennessee. And it was basically downhill for Philip Fulmer ever since then.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, look, that was a very good Tennessee team that year, Mike, and beating the same team twice in one season is very difficult. Auburn had to take on Tennessee again in the SEC title game that year. I don't know if you remember, but Eric Ainge had a very famous quote about how well he thought he was going to do versus Auburn, and we had a little known safety named Junior Rosegreen, and he came into our video room and said his mouth is writing checks that his arm can't cash, and I think he had four interceptions in that game. Junior did. Mm-hmm. So certainly he held up his end of the bargain. That was a fun season for Auburn fans. And I will tell you, as a student being part of that season fundamentally defined what the SEC would be in the championship discussion every year moving forward. After Auburn got left out, where, and you know the story, USC eventually vacated that championship. Oklahoma got beat 55-19 in that game. And there is on the record books, no champion for 2004, but you had an undefeated SEC team that year. No SEC team got left out of the discussion after that Auburn team. As a matter of fact, we a couple years later, we saw the first two-loss national champion in the BCS era at LSU. It was remarkable of the run of championships that the SEC went on after that Auburn team got left out. And that was pain that they endured, I think, for the rest of our SEC brethren. certainly it was, when we look back on those times, I think that was the start of an epic run for the conference as the marquee conference in college football.
Yeah, that's when the SEC chants all began. So a little trip down memory lane, but you know, is Auburn going to get back to that? We just wrapped up spring, and not just at Auburn, but seemingly everywhere, Mike. I mean, it's just they're like locking the doors. You know, they're painting over the windows. I mean, they're not letting any information out. I can't tell you how many SEC coaches or even assistant coaches you ask or hear, and you say, well, who's standing out? They don't even want to say because they're afraid if that gets out, maybe that player is going to jump in the portal or want more money or I mean, who knows what. But what was your main takeaways from Auburn's spring, if you even had any?
You know, it was almost as if spring didn't happen, Mike. This has been the quietest spring that I can remember in college football in recent memory, where it kind of just came and went. A lot of teams started spring really late and ended shortly after that. Auburn start first spring practices on March 25th. It was over by April 12th was A-Day, and we were covering basketball. Auburn was in the middle of a Final Four run. I was barely done covering basketball, and spring is over for football. This is what a lot of coaches want. They want a more of an OTA style spring where it's like a mini camp in the NFL. You're focused on strength and conditioning. And look, I'm not a big fan of anything that takes things away from fans. College football has the longest offseason of any sport. And that midseason engagement that we get February, March, early April, to me is so important to the health of the game that it felt like we got cheated this spring with them taking some of that away. So what did I take away from this camp? Well, it came and went really quickly, but for Auburn, this camp was all about what are they going to do at quarterback. Hugh Freeze came in with a reputation, Mike, that he could develop QBs. And if you look at the history of Auburn, I talk about that early 2000s run. That 2004 run was predicated on Jason Campbell making the jump as an SEC quarterback, a huge jump. Like, and when I say huge, I mean, he wasn't on anybody's draft board. After that season, he got taken in the first round of the NFL draft, had a pretty long NFL career after that. Auburn, when they've been able to find a quarterback, they've been in the conversation for championships. Cam Newton, Nick Marshall, Jarrett Stidham, you know, it feels like it happens once every leap year, but when it does happen, they're there. Did he find that in Jackson Arnold? They went out, they spent, if you believe the reports, probably close to $1 million to get him to come here, the former five-star quarterback. And then you had Deuce Knight. And they had a very, very unique situation this spring, Mike, where you didn't have to pretend to split reps between four quarterbacks like it was some kind of four-horse race, right? You had two guys. You had Jackson Arnold, and you had your five-star QB, Deuce Knight, and that was it. And when I asked Hugh Freeze about this during the spring, he said, I think our team benefited from the fact that we got to only focus on these two guys. And that's going to be the line of fire that Hugh Freeze has to cross at Auburn is, can he put a truly SEC-level quarterback on the field that can pass for over 3,000 yards, have a less than two touchdown to one interception ratio, and can be more than a game manager? Auburn went and stacked the deck around the quarterback this year. Cam Coleman is going to be one of the best wide receivers in college football next year. You got the number two player in the portal in Eric Singleton that came in from Georgia Tech. He's going to be a star, hopefully in the mold of what Keandre Lambert-Smith was able to do. He was taken in the fifth round of the draft this past weekend. And then you've got another top 30 receiver coming out of high school in Perry Thompson, who had a huge spring. Perry Thompson absolutely balled out this spring. He was making every single kind of catch you would expect a top 30 overall play guy to make. And then you have a returning guy in Malcolm Simmons, who was a top 150 guy, and he got on the field a ton. We got flashes of his brilliance with the football in his hands. Auburn said, look, if we can put dynamic pass catchers around our quarterback, so truly dynamic pass catchers, you raise the floor for failure. And I think that that's what they've done here, so that you can have a guy like Jackson Arnold, and he should easily be able to pass for 3,000 yards in today's college football. And maybe that means 2 to 3 more wins for Hugh Freeze in year 3, because I'm telling you, Mike, he's not going to be able to miss a bowl game again and talk about the talent gap and recruiting and all. No, this is year 3. You got the portal, and you've got every financial resource a coach could hope for, and now it's time to show results.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, again, it's early. We've just covered, you know, how little gets out during spring football anyway. But just based on what you know, what you're hearing, what you've seen, what are the early returns on Jackson Arnold? Because even if I talk to Oklahoma people, you know, they don't badmouth him. They just say, they don't even know what to make of him, given Oklahoma's offensive line was a train wreck. They lost all their receivers. They fired the offensive coordinator. He lost his job. He had to come back. I mean, it's just, I don't even know how to evaluate the guy. He could be all SEC. He could lose his starting job. I would believe either one.
Yeah, I think that it can go either way. And this is going to be the test of Hugh Freeze, right? Now you have another highly rated quarterback. And if you can't make Jackson Arnold into at least a top third of the conference QB, especially in terms of passing, that's going to be an indictment on his ability to be able to identify and develop QBs. Look, I don't know anybody in college football that's winning with consistently without dynamic QB play year in and year out. He's a former 5-star guy. A lot of people thought that Jackson Arnold was going to be a guy. And if you're Auburn, you just can't afford to continue to bring guys in with that reputation and miss. So I get where Oklahoma fans are coming from, thinking, I don't know what to make of him, because we were kind of a mess as well, too, offensively. So much of how well a guy does at the college level is about fit and timing, right? Is Jackson Arnold a good fit for what Auburn needs right now? And is the timing right? Well, I would argue with the receivers that he has to work with, the timing is perfect. Right? With the schedule that they have this year, Mike, the timing is really perfect. You open up with Baylor, you got 2 out-of-conference cupcakes, and then you've got 3 SEC games that ends in Georgia to be your first 6 games. Thank you for the schedule there, right? Like Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and then Georgia. If Auburn gets one of those first 3 SEC games, you are 4-2 headed into a stretch where they should be able to win the next 5. Right? Missouri, come on, man. They're going to be a shell of themselves. Arkansas should not scare you. Neither should Kentucky or Vanderbilt and Mercer. Auburn should be able to clean the next 5. Can you get out of the first 6 games 4-2 if you're Hugh Freeze? Look at this schedule. This is the easiest Auburn schedule we've seen in 20 years. I mean, I don't know anybody sitting here calling Georgia or Alabama a win, but if he can't get it done with this schedule, certainly I think that changes are going to be warranted, or at least talk of change is going to be warranted on the plains. Hugh Freeze pointed a lot to year 3 when he got hired, and he said this repeatedly. I've had some very interesting interactions with him over the last 2 years. Last year, we were on the court when Auburn won the SEC championship, the SEC tournament in basketball. And I saw Hugh Freeze and I asked him, I said, when are we going to be able to celebrate your next SEC championship? And he said, Mike, I need 2 more recruiting classes. The portal is not the way to do it. You got to build, if you want a sustainable winner, you have to do it from high school. You need to build a solid base of recruiting from high school. And I said, okay, all right. That's certainly a good message if you're asking for patience, right? And that's what he's gotten, because John Cohen then went on a tour across the SEC media. When Oklahoma came to Auburn for the first time last year, Feinbaum came, and you and I know Paul well. I sat down with Paul at the old athletic department, but before I went on, John Cohen went in front of me, and he said, Mike, he said, look, you know, we had to get rid of all these players, and we had to do all this, and you got to remember this is a rebuild. In year 3, all that's done. Let me tell you something. In this draft, we saw the last remnants of the previous regime pretty much exit Auburn. This is Hugh Freeze's team, whether it's high school guys or it's the portal. And I'm telling you, he won 5 games last year. Auburn had enough talent to make a bowl game last year. You missed a bowl game because of coaching, not because of the talent gap that he keeps talking about every offseason. Now, you can't even talk about that. You brought in, he said, Mike, if we're not in the top 6 or 7 in recruiting by year 3, everybody here is going to be looking for a job. That's what Hugh Freeze said. And to his credit, he went on, he got a top 7 recruiting class in year 2. Right. So he at least believes what he's saying, because where he's put his energy, we've seen returns in that area. Now you need to put that energy into on-field coaching and game planning and making sure that Auburn has a better plan than the guy across the field from them. And because you've got the players, you've got the resources, you've got the schedule now. And now it's time to see the results, the fruition of all that, you know, the manifestation, all that has to come together this year, at least to the tune of 8 wins. Fans keep asking me, would you be satisfied with a 7-5 season? I said, when you look at that schedule, tell me where 7 wins is not going to have you absolutely pissed off at some point during the year. At 7 wins, you lost a game you absolutely were not supposed to lose in inexplicable fashion with that schedule. I think it has to be. I think the number's 8. If you want to prove that the program is truly moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the scenario. I don't know if you've thought of this, Mike, but maybe, again, and they're not, this is like apples to oranges because it's unique situations. But last year, Florida, they had Graham Mertz. They had DJ Lagway. And did Billy Napier really exceed expectations? If you just look at regular season, he only won 7 games. But all of a sudden, that program looks to be skyrocketing up because the freshman DJ Lagway took over. Could you see a scenario where something similar happens at Auburn? Maybe they struggle early, but they throw out Deuce Knight and maybe they catch fire. You know, maybe they win the Iron Bowl with a true freshman. All of a sudden, again, I realize patience is wearing thin, but going into year 4, Auburn may be one of the hottest teams in the SEC if they can do something like that if Deuce Knight is as good as some people are telling us that he is.
Yeah, I love the comparison to what happened at Florida last year, Mike. Talking about DJ Lagway kind of taking over midseason there, you had a guy in Graham Mertz that you felt like set a decent floor for you, at least statistically, right? Graham Mertz was actually one of the better, by the statistics, he was one of the better returning QBs to the SEC last year. It was remarkable thinking, you know, hey, they should be okay. You know, Florida should be in the passing game, but they also had the hardest schedule we've ever seen known to mankind, right? Like 11 Power 5 opponents. I thought the schedule alone was going to get Billy Napier fired. I thought he should have won Time Magazine Man of the Year for pulling out as many wins as he did out of that schedule. Give him a Nobel Peace Prize. Literally every award there is. I think he earned it last. I think he earned his paycheck last year. Certainly what he was able to do. So if he can do that with that roster and this schedule, you know, what is the excuse at Auburn? Right? Like you've got the recruiting, you've got the highly touted. If you've identified your quarterback in Deuce Knight, remember there was a lot of talk about Juju Lewis and all these other highly rated guys. Well, Deuce was the guy that you got. Now, one of the things that I didn't mention coming out of the spring that fans need to know is that Deuce Knight is ahead of schedule. They thought he was going to be a project coming out of high school, and apparently he's picked things up way faster than they thought he was going to pick it up, and he looks great. As a matter of fact, going into 8A, I was told he had not thrown an interception all spring. And he threw a couple, you know, during the spring. The defense showed up and picked the young man off. But when I watched it, they were mistakes that you know are correctable. It's not about his ability to make throws. It's just about how he's seeing the game. And they'll easily be able to go back to the film and correct that and say, listen, what were you seeing here? And get him back on the right track. So right now, the staff feels like Deuce is way ahead of schedule. You bring in Ashton Daniels from Stanford, who is another guy who's played a lot of football at this level, but that he's being brought in to provide a floor for Auburn at QB if Deuce Knight is not ready to take over in case of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because the last thing you want to do is throw a guy out there too early and then ruin his confidence, or you want to give him time to develop. But you still need to win eight games if you're Hugh Freeze, so you don't really care how you get there next year. I think that it's clear, it became clear this spring, Deuce Knight is the future of Auburn football. They're setting it up to have a finally have a natural succession at QB rather than going to the portal looking for a savior at quarterback every offseason. And that's where Auburn was last year. I think that's the year they when Hugh Freeze came in, they were looking for a savior in the portal. Fans wanted Cam Ward. That was never happening. You know, and look, he was the number one pick in the NFL draft, so I get why a lot of fans wanted him. But, you know, you've got to get to a place where a program where you're producing these guys rather than finding them. And Auburn has just not been there. They've had to find quarterbacks rather than produce them. I can't remember. Jason Campbell might be the last guy, I think, that Auburn truly produced. And that was a really, really long time ago. Think about it, Mike. What quarterback came into Auburn as a freshman and left and went on to have an NFL career?
Almost Bo Nix. Almost.
We can't. I don't think we can claim Bo.
No,
honestly, played too many years at Oregon for us to claim Bo. I think Bo survived Auburn.
Yeah.
Personally, so it's just one of those things to me where I am looking at this spring and I'm thinking if Deuce Knight is who they think he is, Auburn's got a really bright future. And if you're Hugh Freeze, you've got possibly two more years with him beyond this year to continue to build and go out and get those top 50 receivers and those rangy pass catchers. And hopefully he doesn't ignore running back along the way. He's not been known for producing, you know, big time backs, but Auburn has been. And, you know, I just think they're in a good spot right now in terms of what their circumstances dictate they can achieve. Now, will they? Like I said, the pressure's on. I think that is self-made pressure from how he underperformed as a coach the first 2 years. First 2 years were disappointing.
And that's a perfect segue because I wanted to ask you, where would you rate that hot seat, if you will? You know, one being low, 10 being high for Hugh Freeze entering the year. And how tricky is that opener? The fact they moved it to Friday at Baylor, I think Auburn is a slight favorite. So, I mean, I think by less than 2 points currently. But, again, that's not an easy game. And I hate for him that they moved it to Friday because all of a sudden, Mike, you lose that. Everybody in the country's watching. There's no NFL. You know, it's like Brian Kelly losing all these openers. I mean, he just gets bagged on for 24 hours, and it just seems like that negatively affects LSU every year.
Yeah, fortunately, it's not a loss that they can't recover from, but it's certainly not the tone you want to set your season with. You raise a good point about that game being on Friday where there's nothing else to watch. The eyes of the world are going to be on you. Now, look, if you're a dog, you want that smoke, right? Like you want those eyes on you and you love that. You love that you're in prime time and there's nothing else to watch, because if you win that game and you win it convincingly, you have a chance to change the narrative around your program headed into the rest of the season. Where that might matter if you're Auburn is that if for some reason he does have, if they win those next five, like I said, after Georgia, Auburn should be in quiet conversation for the back end of the playoff. If he can pull off those five wins, I'm not saying that's where they will be. I'm just saying if it happens that way, because you're going to go into an Iron Bowl against Kalen DeBoer at home, where if you win it, I think they'll be in a situation similar to what South Carolina was last year, where they went on a great run at the end of the season. And a lot of people felt like they should have been in the playoffs. Now, they were one of the hottest teams in America at the end of last season, and I don't think that's really debatable. They did great things down the stretch there. Auburn has a chance with the schedule to do something similar. So if you beat Baylor, again, I think it gives you a little bit more leeway in the middle of your season to maybe lose a close one or lose one where a team was better than we thought they were going to be, and your season is not over, right? If you lose it, again, the pressure continues to ramp from there. Now they'll win the next two. They'll start the season 2-1, no matter what. But I think losing that game puts a lot more pressure to be 2-1 in that opening SEC stretch than 1-2, if that makes sense, right? So now you got to go out and you got to beat Oklahoma and Texas A&M, and you know, like I said, I don't know, nobody's calling Georgia a win right now until, you know, you'd have to see it. So I'll never call a win versus Georgia. Auburn's just done so poorly in that series over the last however many years. But you got to get, now you have to get two of those three, I think, if you lose to Baylor. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough spot to be. I don't know. If you're beating Baylor, if you're losing to Baylor, I don't know that I'd feel confident versus Texas A&M or Oklahoma.
Right.
So Auburn's got a challenge here, but if you can get through the first six games, if you can navigate the first six games 4-2, which shouldn't be unheard of, I think you're in a prime spot to have the type of season you need to get the patience that you need from the fan base and from your administration to continue to build the program.
Is there one game, Mike, that you look at Auburn's schedule where you say, all right, if we win this one, I think we're going to have a really good year, but if we lose it, maybe we fall short of the expectations? You know, is it Baylor? Is it at Oklahoma? Is it at A&M? Maybe it's a different game for you.
I think it's Oklahoma. I think all the most impactful games that tell the story of the season are in the first six. For me, if you beat Oklahoma, you got a chance to have a really good year. I expect Auburn to start 3-0. I will say that. I expect them to beat Baylor and go on and win those next two. But looking forward, if you beat Oklahoma and you're 4-0, that takes the pressure off you. So even if you lose the next two, you got a chance to regroup. And looking at the schedule, remember, there's a bye week there between A&M and Georgia. We're in the two bye week era mm-hmm. now. So you get some time to regroup before Georgia. And then, you know, you've got a chance to do something special starting at Missouri and ending at Mercer. So if you're Auburn, look. You know, you pray to the football gods that Diego Pavia somehow has a stomach ache if you got to play him again. Good God, that guy. Right. And
no one more upset that he's coming back than Hugh Freeze. You know what?
you gotta solve their Pavia problem. Certainly there in the second half, but it's not undoable, man. I just think that it's a really manageable schedule. Doesn't happen often, but with the elimination of divisions, it's created some opportunities for Auburn to get in that, like, that easy schedule cycle. You know what I mean, Mike? Yeah. And have a year kind of like Georgia. You know, they're a great team and they're loaded with talent, but I think that any educated observer would say Georgia has had some cakewalk schedules for an SEC team over the years. Auburn, you just haven't had them, and this to me is as close to a cakewalk schedule as you're going to get in this conference. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mike, I really appreciate your time. Last question for you. We've basically been asking everybody this offseason, so my favorite question to ask people is, let's assume, which it's not a given, but let's assume SEC goes to 9-game conference schedule. And they go to that model where you have three permanent rivals that you play every year, and then they would obviously rotate the other six. If they go to that, who does Mike Gittens want to see Auburn play every year? And this is one of the easier ones, but I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm old school, so my answer to this question is always going to be Georgia, Alabama, and LSU. Auburn fans think it's unfair that used to think it was unfair that we had to play those three teams every single year. But I'm telling you, you should be in a place as a program where you want that smoke, right? And Alabama, that game's always going to be played. So you keep that on the schedule. Georgia, Deep South's oldest rivalry, you can't eliminate that one. But who is the third team? I love that game with LSU. Yeah. Going back to my time as a student, I remember what the players used to talk about what this game was like after. It was the hardest hitting game of the year, they called it. And the recovery room was full. There was a line at the recovery room after the LSU game because they knew those teams were going to go get after it. If you've never been down to Death Valley for a game, it is like nothing else in sports.
Yeah.
Man, I'm telling you, a night game at Death Valley is just something you got to experience. Put it on your bucket list. I would love to see Auburn play that game every year. And what Brian Kelly is doing there, I think in the playoff era, to get in, you still want those resume builders. It's funny you asked this question talking about the 9-game conference schedule. Every single time I see Greg Sankey, I talk to him about this. And I asked him about the 9-game schedule, and he said, well, we need more data to see if we're going to move to nine. And I said, Commissioner, that sounds like if you can get six teams in, then you stay. And if for some reason the SEC doesn't get enough teams in, you know, like you consider changing the model. And he kind of smirked at me, and he knows it's all about how many teams they can get into the college football playoff. That's it. He believes that he has built the best conference in sports, and he wants it to stay that way. He wants SEC supremacy to stay on top. He was at every single game site we went to for basketball. This man bleeds SEC, and I think that if you're Auburn, if you go to a nine-game schedule, conference schedule, you throw LSU back in there, man. I hate that fans don't get that game every single year. I just think it's one of the best games in college
football. I think the commissioner, he said that. I think he meant to say money. All right, Mike, I really appreciate your time. Before you go, can you tell my audience how to follow you and how to find the War Report?
Just check us out on social media. You can follow me at Mike Gittins on Twitter, at The War Report on every social media platform, for TW Report on TikTok. You can also follow me on Instagram at Mike Gittins _. You can catch me doing local TV or find Bomb or something here or there. We're busy at The War Report this
time. All right, thank you so much. I'll cut it right there. Man, that was great.